Many people who go on diets get through the day by trying not to think about food, but according to Peter Kaminsky, thinking more about what we eat may be the most effective way to lose weight. After his career as a food writer and cookbook author caused him to gain weight and develop related health problems, he realized that enjoying and being more careful about what he ate was the key to turning his life around. He shares his tips for a healthier lifestyle and a few recipes in his latest book, Culinary Intelligence, The Art of Eating Healthy and Reeling Well. It's published by Knopf, and he joins us today along with Marion Nessel, professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at NYU, most recently the author of her latest book, Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. I'm very pleased to welcome both of them back to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Glad to be here.
So, Peter, do you consider this a diet book?
No.
How is it different from all of the other things that we've seen?
Well, it's some folks have called it the anti-diet diet book, which I kind of like. I'm calling it that. But, is that mine or yours, Mayor? No, I have my own coffee here. So
you're still drinking coffee.
Why not? Why not?
So, it's good for you.
I'm one of those people. Kaminsky, you got an authority problem, is what they used to tell me in junior high. I'm one of those people, when I read a diet that says on day one, dry toast, and on day two, mashed lettuce, and 3 weeks from now, some dry turkey, I find it impossible to follow. I find it to be a turnoff. It doesn't stimulate my appetite or give me pleasure. I think an overly regimented diet, diet by schedule, is kind of like sex by schedule. It doesn't quite have the same spontaneity.
So you're giving up all those dry foods, but not the dry wit.
Here you go.
You do have a background in comedy, don't you?
I do. I was the editor of National Lampoon, and 15 years ago, with my brother and some friends, created the Mark Twain Prize at the Kennedy Center, which goes to a humorist every year.
So how did you wind up writing about food?
When I was excused from National Lampoon in the late 70s, which happens to everyone there, I had discovered fly fishing as sort of an antidote to, I was going to say anecdote, of course, an antidote to the craziness, druggy weirdness of Lampoon.
And you've been here before to talk about fishing.
Indeed I have. And so the bar was rather low in fishing writing. And I must say, I discovered later it wasn't that much higher in food writing. So it's, you could get into it. You could get into it more easily.
Now, Marion, your name comes up in the book a few times. Did Peter consult you when he was working on the book?
He sent it to me for a blurb. I blurbed it. I just love the idea of the flavor principle and flavor per calorie and the emphasis that he places on taste, because it's what counts, even if you're dieting.
Well, he quotes one of your rules, rules from one of your books, What to Eat, where you laid out the two ground rules for a healthy lifestyle. One, eat real food, and two, move.
Yes, well, those are both very good things to do.
So why do some people find it so hard to abide by those simple rules?
Well, we live in an environment in which we have an enormous amount of food available that the food industry needs to sell. And products make a lot of money for a lot of companies. And so that's where the emphasis goes in marketing and advertising. And food is everywhere in enormous portions 24/7.
But we hear a lot about the obesity problem in America. Peter, you write that although it's the fastest growing life-threatening condition in the U.S., obese people should not consider themselves to be a social issue. Is that the way it's being presented, General?
Well, I think what I mean is that if you want to control your obesity, although it's important that we, support whole food producers, small F, and organic and seasonal and local, and get the sugar and the soda out of the schools. Those are all social policy questions, which I think are very important, and Marion's put them very much front and center. But
if you stigmatize
it, ain't going to save you or
because
me.
If you stigmatize me and you tell me that I'm screwed up, I may very well. When I used to smoke and people told me smoking was bad for me, I used to say, don't make me nervous, I'll smoke another cigarette. It was stupid, but there is a certain kind of a logic in that.
Well, there is a certain hectoring lecturing aspect, as there is in most things in our, you know, Puritan culture, about things that bring us pleasure, among them food. But the real point I wanted to make is, in spite of the alarming statistics, is it 300 or 400 more calories per day in the last 15 years that Americans consume? And we've put on 2 billion pounds of weight, I think, since 1995. In spite of all that, everyone who has maintained a healthy weight did it in spite of those statistics. So you need to find personal salvation to stick around to implement some policy.
Or I would put it a different way. You need to learn how to manage the environment. But I really like your cigarette example, because what changed cigarette smoking in the United States was not telling people that they were bad people for smoking. It was making it impossible for them to smoke and lead a reasonable life. They couldn't smoke on airplanes. They couldn't smoke in offices. The taxes went up. All of those kinds of things changed the smoking environment. I think we need to consider the same kind of thing for food.
Well, whenever anybody suggests putting a tax on soft drinks, I just rode to work on the subway today. There's a big ad campaign from the soft drink manufacturers telling me that Mayor Bloomberg and others are doing a terrible thing by suggesting that kind of tax.
Well, of course they are. They make a fortune on selling sugar water to people, and they don't care what happens to people who drink it. That's not what they're about. Their job as corporations is to sell more products so their stockholders are happy. It's really as simple as that, and you don't need to bring in all this other stuff. That's what they're about. That's the Beverage Association in action. They're spending a fortune on those ads.
You have made a career that revolves around food and nutrition, but you haven't done stand-up, have you?
Oh, I'm afraid not. I don't think I'm very funny.
What got you into the field?
I was given a course to teach. I was handed it. I was teaching molecular and cell biology, and it was my job to teach whatever the department wanted. It turned out to be nutrition. It was like falling in love, and I've never looked back.
Well, you didn't fall in love in the same way that Peter did. Peter, you say that after you were given your first food column, Underground Gourmet, in New York Magazine, you noticed that you were starting to gain weight. But you don't say that you felt particularly concerned at the time.
I didn't. I had a ball. I mean, I got to eat out of New York's ethnic cornucopia, and there's nothing like it in the world. I got to eat, you know, I would, in addition to Underground, I was writing these big cover stories when Danielle or Le Circo. But I mean, I got to eat amazing food.
Well, you go to those restaurants in your capacity as a food critic, and the chef sends out a 10-course meal.
With 10 desserts to follow.
Yeah, and lots of wines as well. And did you feel obligated to eat everything that was put in front of you?
Well, one, they sort of try to make you feel that way, but I found a good way to, like, exit when you're about to explode was to tell the waiter, to tell the chef, he wins.
Anthony Bourdain has written about the bloated feeling you get after having eaten through one of those huge, tasty menus. While you're eating them, you're saying, wow, this is great. And then you're in the cab, you say, oh, boy. But you mentioned some of those chefs, Daniel Ballou, Eric Rupert, Alfred Portali, Jean-Georges, Anthony Bourdain. And they are all thin. So how do they do it?
Well,
they don't eat at their own restaurants?
Danielle has the metabolism of a gypsy moth. I mean, I've traveled with this guy. I mean, I don't know how he does it, because he does like food. But, mostly chefs, they're standing up most of the day. They're sort of tasting things. They're keeping themselves more or less satiated with very flavorful food. So although I know some chefs that look like Botero sculptures, I also know a bunch that, as you say, are pretty trim.
Now, Marion, Ellen from New York City has written on our show page, why is it that in the 1950s most people were thinner than now, yet we had no food labels? People ate high-fat foods at every meal, bacon, meat and butter, full-fat ice cream, etc. Plus, nobody jogged or went to health clubs.
Yeah, well, I mean, what changed, and it actually changed in the 1970s and 80s, was agricultural policy that made more food available, a change in the way Wall Street evaluates corporations, going from favoring blue chip stocks to favoring immediate higher returns on investment, and a complete deregulation of a lot of marketing, all of that pushed food in ways that it never was available before. I like to ask the question, when did it become okay to eat in bookstores?
But also, we saw the sudden explosion of fast food outlets. And Peter writes, my heart, my gut, and my blood sugar were unimpressed by the four-star pedigree of many of those extra calories he was getting at the fancy restaurants to those various body parts. There was no distinction between a Ferran Adrià tasting menu and a Colonel Sanders variety bucket. So is that true biologically? You're a nutritionist.
A calorie is a calorie from the standpoint of body weight. From the standpoint of health, it makes a lot of difference what you eat. And Ferran Adrià tasting menu is not something that you can do every day.
Not at all. I think he just closed his restaurant.
Yeah, nor would you want to at that cost.
My guests are Peter Kaminsky, who's written Culinary Intelligence, The Art of Eating Healthy and Really Well, and Marion Nessel of NYU. Both of them have been guests here before to talk about various aspects of the food culture. But today we're talking about eating sensibly. And Peter, you say that before you change your diet, you tried working out. Many chefs tell me that's what they do. Why didn't it bring results?
Well, it brought health results for sure. I was fitter and more toned. But the point is, I think people look at working out, too many people look at it as putting calories in the bank.
I'm always hungry afterwards, so I go and I have something to eat.
But the moral equation is you jog a mile, you can have a beer. It's the same kind of moral calculus that people – I was on an Amtrak train last week, and there was a guy, had to have a 45-inch waist, right? And he really went very thoroughly with what kind of diet sodas they offered. And having found the one that he liked, he then bought a large hot dog. So, again, this notion of putting calories in the bank by working out or by abstaining, and then you can pig out, the caloric math never works out, ever.
So exercise without a change in eating habits is ineffective.
As a weight as your primary weight control method, it sure is.
So you write about what you call culinary intelligence. And can you explain what that phrase means to you?
It really comes down to three things. And I mean, not to be a mutual admiration society, but again, I'm in debt to what I've read and heard from Marion over the years. And at least by my interpretation, what I like to follow is, don't eat processed ingredients. You're not going to go to hell if you do, but you're much better off if you avoid them. That's the white stuff, although I do have a pasta exemption that I can talk about if you like. That's the white.
So don't eat white foods.
Don't eat white foods. Stay
what
away
does
from
that mean?
Sugar.
Wonder Bread.
It means white flour, white rice, refined sugar. And in that, I guess I would also throw in, although it's not white, it's clear, alcohol. A lot of calories. Although with alcohol, I'll never do without it. I just sort of cut my intake about in a third.
Well, wine also has some health benefits we've learned
does.
In
it
recent years.
Does.
So is there sometimes just a trade-off?
It has brain benefits. I think a little bit of wine. Listen, I wrote Seven Fires with Francis Mallmann in South America. I'm basically a vegetable, steak, and red wine diet, and that's when I took off my first 20 pounds because I drank less wet red wine, stayed away from the white bread and the desserts. So
that's the Atkins diet.
Is it the Atkins diet? Well, no. I ate whole grains. So stay away from the processed stuff. Buy the best, most full-flavored ingredients you can afford. Because only then will you be satisfied. And that doesn't need to mean foie gras. That can mean great tomatoes. And cook or live with someone who does. A steady diet of eating out or takeout is not a diet that loses weight.
One way that we maximize taste, Marion, is to use a lot of butter.
Yum.
How do we get around that?
Oh, you just use a little bit less, but you got to use it in some cooking. And if you're eating and balancing your calories in other ways, you know, it's not so terrible. It's not poison. Sugar's not poison. Butter's not poison. Alcohol's not poison. All of these things are dose dependent. And if you're using them in reasonable quantities, they're going to make life much pleasanter.
So, Peter, you also have coined a term, FPC, flavor per calorie.
Yes. A lot of people have picked that up. What I mean by that is either through the choice of ingredients or the way you prepare them, if you pick, you know, full-flavored vegetables at their peak, terrific grass-fed beef, and you prepare them well. You know, you need – and it ain't that hard. It ain't that hard to figure out what's good food. We've got a million generations of humans who have evolved a very complex language of flavor. And we've also been cooking for about a million years. And you put those two things together, you're in much better hands in your home with your own ingredients than any place else.
Well, since we're cutting out white flour, can we lose weight by eating whole wheat bread?
You can lose weight eating anything. There's the famous Twinkie diet. That's my favorite. you know, if you reduce calorie intake below expenditure, you're going to lose weight. It's not anything more complicated than that. There are some ways to do it that are easier than others, and a lot of people find Atkins kind of diets easier than some other kinds. But ultimately, you got to do it, and you have to figure out how to manage the environment so that you're not eating all day long and eating huge amounts of food.
Well, what are your thoughts about all those various diets? Atkins, just one of many. Then there is the anti-Atkins diet that comes out where somebody says, you know, proves that Atkins doesn't work, and we go on and on and on. Is the diet approach the right way? Peter's suggesting simply thinking smartly, intelligently about what we put in our mouths.
Yeah, if you think about it, and that helps you reduce calorie intake below expenditure, you're going to lose weight. I mean, whatever it takes. People who've read Why Calories Count are telling me that they're losing weight by just kind of paying attention to it. That's kind of nice. We didn't write it as a diet book, but it's kind of nice to know it's working.
Well, water has no calories.
Yes.
So is that what we should be drinking instead of juices and soft drinks?
Well, it depends on what else you're eating. You know, a little juice doesn't hurt. A soft drink once in a while doesn't hurt. But if you're consuming 1,000 or 2,000 calories a day for soft drinks, that's a really easy way to start making a change that'll make a difference.
Peter, you say that a slice of apple pie and a glass of wine are about the same amount of calories. Since you'd rather drink the wine, you just make that choice.
Yeah, we're forced to. I mean, if I'm not drinking wine, I might have some apple pie. But I don't, you know, I don't eat a complete soup to nuts, heavy calorie diet.
You also say that you enlist the help of larders. What does that mean?
I always keep ingredients around that can that are either nourishing and, you know, not full of sugar or simple carbohydrates.
What about full of lard? Do larders have lard?
Lard is fabulous. If you recall from my book, Pig Perfect, those pigs in Spain that eat acorns, their fat is nearly 70% unsaturated.
So why does lard have such a bad reputation?
Oh, it's old reputation from when it was very high in saturated fat, and they were even hydrogenating it for a while, so it had trans fat as well.
Well, what about the whole matter of foods that are advertised as low calorie? Shouldn't we just try to focus on using those?
It's like a politician who advertises him or herself as honest. You know?
It's an oxymoron.
You know, they're leaving something out of the equation.
And then you also point out that if you use small amount of whole milk rather than a large amount of skim milk, you're getting more flavor.
And yeah, it's just
in your coffee.
It's beautiful. It's more palatable. It's got some silkiness and smoothness to it. So,
well, do you have any suggestions about how to order at a restaurant, Mary?
Oh, I find it very difficult, and especially, you know, the big thing we learned when doing the research for this book was what happens to you when you get older. You can't eat the way you used to, so you have to order less.
Well, when I was younger, I just cut out desserts for a little while, and I lost weight. Mm-hmm. Now, if I cut out desserts for a while, I've cut out desserts for a while.
Yes, right. Exactly. It's the dirtiest trick about getting older.
Now, why is that? My body has just changed?
Your metabolism slows down. You don't have as much muscle mass. Whatever it is, it's a terrible conspiracy, and it has to be dealt with and managed. And I like to deal with it by eating what I like, but just not eating as much of it.
Now, we have heard in recent times that we should eat locally and seasonally. Does that really help, or is that's something that is concerned about totally other things like environment?
I think it makes the food taste better.
Absolutely.
If it hasn't traveled 2 weeks from California, it's likely to be tasting a lot better, and taste helps.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, that said, when people who go to a farmer's market and think because they've voted for, you know, with their fork, that they're therefore going to get great food and lose weight, you still have, you know, some farms have good stuff, some farms not so good. Tomatoes come in and from South Jersey before they do from New York State, but they're going to be in the same green market. So you need to shop around, as Smokey Robinson said.
And is sugar from a vegetable? When I roast a carrot and it really winds up tasting sweet, is that fewer calories than if I eat something that comes from white sugar?
Oh, sugars are sugars, but the ones
Peter didn't jump in and say honey, honey.
But the ones in ones in the carrots come with vitamins, minerals, fiber, and a lot of other things. And there's not that much sugar in a carrot. I wouldn't worry about it for a second. You know, some sugar is fine. It's just that when you're mainlining it in drinks, that it's not such a good idea.
And isn't it true, Marion, that when you eat sugar in fruits, its uptake, its metabolism is mediated by
the fiber.
The fiber.
Yeah.
Whereas
to some extent,
plain old straight sugar, you're mainlining it.
Yeah.
Well, you tell an interesting story, Peter, about eating a carrot at Dan Barber's farm-to-table restaurant that had a very sweet taste. And you were told that Dan's farmer has been seasoning his soil with almond shells.
Yeah. This is Dan was buying almond oil from a fellow in France. And when he went to visit him, the guy made him some carrots. He said, these carrots taste like almonds. He said, what's the reason they do? I put all my almond shells in the carrot beds. So Dan tried that among a number of things he's done too. Dan believes that you can start to build, and I do too, you can start to build flavor in at the soil level. It's not all after it gets picked and cooked. You know, you can raise things that are more full flavored.
A listener, Tom, asks, what about recent work that suggests that grains are a problem for losing weight?
Well, it depends on how much of them you eat. Always, it's a question of quantity. Grains are fine in small quantity. If you're eating tons of them, more than you expend in energy, you're going to gain weight.
I love mushrooms, and one day I read in the New York Times that they can be carcinogenic.
Oh, dear.
What?
You can't believe everything
you
read.
Can I quote you, Marion? One of your books I read, for every PhD, there's an equal but opposite PhD. And I think that's what these studies tend to show.
You talk about the difference between good meat and bad meat.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've ever eaten free range, you know, pigs in Spain, or even pigs in America that free range and eat acorns and grasses, or true free range chickens, likewise eat the fruits of the field, or cows that eat grass, it's going to have more flavor, and they also need to get big and succulent and fat, you know, and the fat is not what's going to kill you. Whereas if you eat what I think is inferior feedlot, you know, commercially produced stuff, it ain't going to taste like much. I mean, and therefore you're going to need to doctor it up with sauces and sweet things and cheese.
But Peter, there's another kind of a problem. And whenever I do a segment like this, listeners write in and say, these people are elitists. Do they not know what free-range chickens cost, what Nyman Ranch beef
costs?
I will
gladly sit down with any reader or listener and put them a side-by-side taste test. I've done it. You're going to be satisfied quicker with the superior flavor and texture.
So you'll eat a smaller portion.
It works out.
Marion, do you agree?
I would say the same thing, and I don't know anybody who is an elitist foodie who doesn't care a lot about making sure that everybody in the country has access to the same kind of food that we do.
It's the most important thing.
But it is. Leslie Stahl asked Alice Waters if she was an elitist, and Alice said, well, you know, you can spend the money on a pair of sneakers, or you can spend the money on better food. And that really outraged some of the viewers.
Yeah, I would put it in a different way. I would say that the price of food is set by the way our agricultural policies work. And what we really need is an agricultural policy that makes healthier, better food available to everybody, which right now it does not.
You know, I read, I think it was Raj Patel, I read something in the last few weeks talking about the false dichotomy between organic and industrially raised food. And he pointed out, you know, apart from all the subsidies that big agriculture gets, he said research, which has developed, you know, flavor and taste and yield, it's been over the last six decades, the amount of money spent on research for conventional versus organic is 99-1. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get some results with that kind of score.
Gary from Port Washington asks, does your body have a point when losing or gaining weight is settled on?
Oh, it's very yes and no. If you start trying to deliberately lose weight, you don't need as many calories, and you're going to have to keep compensating and compensating and compensating. So it's not easy. You've got to constantly reduce the amount that you're eating if you're going to be trying to lose weight. It's not fun.
Coming up for you, Marion, is a panel called How Would Julia Child Vote on the 2012 Farm Bill, Culinarian Interests and Obligations?
Yes, that's tomorrow at 4 o'clock at the Fales Library at NYU.
So this is all about foreign policies, what we've just been talking about. Perhaps if the government gave more subsidies to people who were not doing factory farming took it away from the factory farmers, we would be encouraging people to eat more healthily?
Well, it certainly would be reducing the price of those foods. I mean, right now we have an agricultural policy that supports corn and soybeans and won't let those people grow fruits and vegetables. We need an agricultural policy that supports specialty crops, fruits, vegetables, and those kinds of things, and that supports sustainable and organic agriculture. It would be healthier for us and for the planet.
So have you looked at the 2012 Farm Bill? Is it any worse than the 2011?
No, actually, it's got some things in it that are pretty good. But with that said, it's still its basic purpose. It's got millions of dollars that are put into fruits and vegetables in various ways, but the billions still go to the growers of corn and soybeans. But it's a step in the right direction.
Peter, you look fabulous. You really have taken off a lot of weight. Other people have gone through this. Oprah lost a lot of weight. I know a couple of people in the food world who went on diets and lost a lot of weight and then put it back on. What are you going to do to not put it back on?
Well,
how long have you kept the weight off?
I'm at 5 years. It's probably universal, but I look at it as my American male's answer to why French women don't get fat. You need to change the way you eat. And if you find ways to eat that will satisfy you, you've got to be satisfied. Almost any diet you're going to lose weight on, it's the long term that becomes the problem. And if you buy the best ingredients and they're cooked well, I think you can make that change. I have.
And we said stay away from restaurants. If you do go to a restaurant.
No, don't stay away from restaurants.
Well, how do you order wisely?
Well, I try to go with a lot of people so I can taste what's on their plate and not have to order it.
But can you spot something that's going to really be full of calories?
Oh, all of it is full of calories. You just can't order as much as you would at home.
When you see all those things that say, you know, with melted cheese, with crumbled cheese, in a cheese sauce, you know, or a sweetened fruit sauce, there's some calories in
there. You have to assume.
My thanks to both of you for being on our show. Marion Essel is professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at NYU. And her latest book is Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. Peter Kaminsky's book is Culinary Intelligence, The Art of Eating Healthy and Really Well. It's from Knopf. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.